Now, back to the heavy hitters.
Oh, Drebin, I don't want any more trouble like you had last year on the South Side. Understand? That's my policy.
On the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM.
Yes, well, when I see five weirdos dressed in togas stabbing a guy in the middle of the park in full view of 100 people, I shoot the bastards. That's my policy.
And InsideSTL.com.
Welcome back into the Frank and Helen's Pizzeria Studios. Kyrie Irving scored 46 points, LeBron James added 34, and the Cavaliers had to rally from an 11-point deficit in the fourth quarter to edge the Lakers 125-120 on Sunday night. Washington has hired Syracuse assistant coach Mike Hopkins as its next head coach. Hopkins will sign a 6-year deal with Washington. And finally, on this day in 1991, Michael Jackson signed a $1 billion contract with Sony, the richest deal in recording history.
Imagine how big that number looked back in 1991, $1 billion. I mean, that's a big number now. Back in 1991, that might as well have been $10, $20 billion.
What vault is all that money in?
Yeah, that's what I want to know, too. Joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line is Kieran Mulvaney. He is a boxing writer for HBO.com and the author of the best-selling book, The Great White Bear. You can follow him on Twitter at Kieran Mulvaney. Kieran, how are you, sir? Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
What's going on, buddy?
It sounds like you got to witness a pretty exciting fight on Saturday night at Madison Square Garden between Gennady Golovkin and Daniel Jacobs. And it sounds like Golovkin was lucky to walk out of there with the decision. What was your impression of the fight?
Yeah, well, I'm one of many people who called it entirely wrong. I think we knew going in that Danny Jacobs had the potential to be a real nightmare for Golovkin, as we all say, you know, styles make fights, right? And with his height, with his size, with his skills, with his power, we thought, you know, Jacobs just could be the guy to give Golovkin real fits. But nonetheless, I picked Golovkin to ultimately prevail by knockout around the middle rounds, and most people kind of felt that way. I actually thought Golovkin was going to do something special. It was Jacobs who really fought out of his skin. I still thought that Golovkin won the fight. I had this fight scored the same way as one of the judges, 114-113 for Gennady Golovkin, and the others had it 115-112. I think that was the right decision. However, I wouldn't really argue with anyone who had it slightly did this the other way for Danny Jacobs. It was a very, very close fight. And I think the thing is that we're so used to seeing Gennady Golovkin walk through people that the fact that he was in a close fight was such a shock that Jacobs was the moral victor, and Golovkin, just by virtue of not knocking him out inside 30 seconds, sort of was somewhat diminished.
Yeah, and really, I think what's building here, Kieran, is that you have Kell Brook, you know, was able to connect, and then you have Daniel Jacobs, who pushes him for 12 rounds. You know, something that Max Kellerman really brought up after the fight, do you think age is starting to get to, you know, Gennady Golovkin? He is 34. He's going to be 35. Do you think, along with opponents building up a blueprint of how to beat him, do you think age is also coming into play here as he really kind of becomes, you know, kind of steps closer to fame?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of hope not, because it feels that we've been cheated of half the career of Gennady Golovkin because he didn't come over here until he was 30, 31. And you kind of want that ride to last a little bit longer. It is possible. I think you're a bit more onto something, I think, with the blueprint there. And that, you know, with both Brook and Jacobs, even though Brook was a welterweight moving up, he was a bigger guy than Golovkin. He had some reach on him. And, you know, I think guys are beginning to realize that if you can keep your distance a little bit and fire punches from sort of like middle distance at him, you can catch him. What's more interesting to me in that respect is that what Golovkin has always been best at is the little things that folks don't always appreciate. Yeah, he knocks people out, but the reason he's able to do that, he has this really subtle footwork that enables him to cut off the ring and stop guys from getting away. He didn't do that for the first couple of rounds against Kell Brook, and then he decided after he got hit to do that, and he did it effectively. He started to do it against Danny Jacobs after he knocked him down. And then Jacobs was able to kind of get out of that box that Golovkin was putting him in. Jacobs was doing the footwork to keep the fight at his distance. And that's kind of interesting. If Golovkin is sort of losing that footwork ability, that's going to be difficult for him to maintain the sort of success that he's had up to this point.
Kieran, where does each guy go from here? Do we see an immediate rematch, or who do we see these guys fight next?
I don't think we do see an immediate rematch. There's a couple of reasons for that. There's a little bit of like boxing being boxing, political difficulty, and probably in making it happen again. I think it will probably happen again if Golovkin stays undefeated. Next time out, it looks as if Gennady will fight. He has three of the four major sanctioning body belts at middleweight. He wants that fourth belt, and he seems likely to take on a guy called Billy Joe Saunders from the United Kingdom for that fourth belt, and possibly that fight might actually be in Golovkin's native Kazakhstan. If he gets through that, then it will be either, I think, we'll see a Jacobs rematch or the long-mooted fight with Canelo Alvarez in the fall. If it's Canelo Alvarez and he beats Alvarez, then we'll see Danny Jacobs, I suspect. I'm not quite sure what's up next for Danny Jacobs. His stock has risen considerably. He's really reinforced his position as, you know, at worst, the third best middleweight in the world behind Golovkin and Canelo. He's really shown that, he's a real player, and he's certainly going to earn a lot of money against whoever he fights next while he's waiting for that Golovkin rematch. And what an unbelievable story. Let us not forget, 6 years ago, Daniel Jacobs had cancer, and he came back and achieved this, fought the most feared fighter in the world pretty much to a draw. An absolutely phenomenal achievement and a tremendous story.
Kieran, you brought it up. What do we have to do to get pretty much the dream fight, which would be Golovkin versus Canelo Alvarez? What do we have to do? Who do we have to bribe? Do we give the money to Don King? Do we give the money to...
Unfortunately, the guy you need to put the money to has so much more money than all of us and probably everyone listening all put together. And that is Oscar De La Hoya, who is Canelo Alvarez's promoter. I suspect it's more likely to happen now that Golovkin's finally started to look vulnerable. There's no question that Oscar De La Hoya has been deliberately keeping Canelo, who's his biggest cash cow, away from Golovkin in the hope that we would start seeing exactly what we're seeing, hence the vulnerability in Golovkin. And meanwhile, Canelo is improving. So I think probably if Golovkin beats Billy Joe Saunders, if Canelo beats Julio Cesar Chavez when they fight on May 6th in Las Vegas, I think there's a very good chance that we will finally see that fight in September of this year.
And really, are we overlooking Julio Cesar Chavez? I know he's messed up his career a lot. He has the genes of a boxing god, but he's kind of had a couple false starts. Are we kind of overlooking a guy who, like we've said with Golovkin and Brook and Jacobs, Chavez Jr. is a big guy, and could he possibly give Canelo more of a fit than we're really giving him credit for?
Well, that's what I think is so genuinely interesting about this fight. Look, Julio Cesar Chavez has done nothing to deserve this fight. He's been suspended for, smoking pot. He's put very little effort into a lot of his fights. He wouldn't be here were it not for his name, but he does have that name. And here's the thing. He is a big guy. He might not be the most dedicated fighter in the world. He might not be the best fighter in the world, but he can fight. And he's substantially bigger than anyone Canelo Alvarez has fought before. That is what makes it a very, very tough fight. And even though Canelo, Chavez has wasted his good familial name and some of his talent, he's never really been badly hurt. Canelo's moving up a lot in weight, and so that's going to be a really interesting challenge for him. I do think even though Chavez hasn't deserved this shot, I'm really intrigued by the fight. I'm kind of looking forward to it. It almost has a bit of a carnival act atmosphere about it, and I think it has the potential to be a real fun fight.
Kieran, moving up in weight and a little over a month away, we got a big heavyweight showdown between Anthony Joshua and Vladimir Klitschko. What are you looking forward to most out of that fight?
Well, I mean, this is with respect to Tyson Fury, who remains the lineal heavyweight champion but is in recess because of some personal issues. This really is, I think, the battle to determine who is the best heavyweight in the world right now. And we want to see, did Vladimir Klitschko just have an off night against Tyson Fury when he lost the belt to him? Or is he aging? Or is Anthony Joshua, ready to take over that mantle? Is Joshua too raw, or is he just about ready? I think the ceiling for Anthony Joshua is really, really high. He's a very charismatic guy. He looks like a heavyweight champion should. He's a very nice guy. He's highly articulate. He's, I think, absolutely the kind of guy who, Vladimir Klitschko has been a fantastic, I think, ambassador for the sport. But Joshua, were he to win, were he to defeat Klitschko, I think he's the kind of guy who could bring some excitement back to the heavyweight division. So, also looking for probably 100,000 people packed into Wembley Stadium watching this fight. It's going to be huge. I mean, the atmosphere is going to be incredible.
Kieran Mulvaney joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at Kieran Mulvaney. Kieran, sticking with Vladimir Klitschko, do you think that he's a little bit of an underappreciated heavyweight in his time, that the competition really hasn't exactly been the greatest for him, and he had his early struggle? He came out, you know, hotter like a house on fire, and then when Corey Sanders knocked him out and everybody kind of had, everybody thought he had like a little bit of a suspect jaw, people were kind of worried about him, and then he got with Emmanuel Sanders, got his career back on track, but the competition hasn't been there, maybe too many fights over Europe. What do you think about the overall legacy of Vladimir Klitschko?
It's a difficult career to assess for all the reasons that you stated. You know, he's been completely dominant. A lot of folks have not warmed to him, particularly over here, because, as you said, when he did reinvent himself, it was as a fairly cautious, though technically excellent fighter. And that wasn't necessarily what we wanted to see from a heavyweight champion. And like you said, the quality of a lot of the opposition was not great. I have him just outside my top 10, him and his brother, both of all time, you know, heavyweight champions, but, underappreciated very much in the sense that he's an articulate man. He never fails to show up in shape. He always prepared for his fights. He took the job very seriously. He took his role very seriously. He's a guy who could do media interviews in four languages, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
and was always, I think, a credit to the sport, and always has been a credit to the sport. And I think that we will appreciate him more for that when he's no longer around. I think we'll miss him a little bit when he's gone, simply because of the class that he brought to the sport. He's a great guy to deal with. And, yeah, he was really the most exciting of fighters to watch as a heavyweight champion, but you always knew that he was taking it seriously and never wanted to let his fans down.
Kieran, I mean, now there was another fight on that card Saturday night that was just a fight of the year candidate with Chocolatito Gonzalez and Sorung Vasai, the Thailand fighter who just came over and just dominated. But for me, I almost, watching that fight, do you think it was a war, but do you think the cuts on Chocolatito's head from an accidental headbutt, do you think that swayed the judges a little bit? I thought that Chocolatito dominated the second half of that fight, but he gets his first loss. Do you think the action at the beginning and the cuts may have swayed the judges on their ruling?
I'm not entirely sure. I mean, my colleague Ed Mulholland took a photograph of the ring canvas after that fight, and it's a sight to behold. I mean, it was covered in blood. I mean, absolutely covered in blood from the cuts around Chocolatito's eye. I'm not, you know, it's interesting. I'm the same as you. I thought that after a slow start and a close start that Chocolatito clearly, you know, clearly won the fight. It was close, but I thought that he came on so strongly after the first few rounds that I thought he clearly won it. I was very surprised to hear the judge's verdict, but I don't know. All the judges' scores were very close. One had it 113-113, and the others had it 114-112 for Sisraket Surungasai. And I think that, and I just wanted to say that to prove that I could say that, because it took me all week.
Well done, sir. It took me the whole telecast to go, I think by the end of the night, I'm ready to try to say this name by myself, in my car, and nobody else.
Yeah, I had to host the weigh-in on Friday, and I was spending half a Thursday just saying it over and over in my head.
Kieran, let me also ask you, did he remind you of a young Manny Pacquiao? That's kind of something I took away from watching that fight.
Did you see his calves and how muscular they were? They looked very much, the person who was sitting next to me said, oh my goodness, look at his calves. He looks just like Manny Pacquiao in terms of his explosiveness and how thick his legs were. Absolutely. But the point I was going to say is all the judges' scorecards are very close together. And when that happens, that means that they all collectively saw something that the rest of us didn't. And sometimes, as I've experienced, when you're right on the ring apron, the fight looks a little bit different, even then when you're just a few rows away. So they saw something, and I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the blood. I don't know what it was, but they may have felt that his punches were more effective up close than we realized. Either way, even though I thought the Chocolatito Gonzalez won that fight, he struggled now for three fights in a row relative to his standards. And I think that, a little like we were saying with Golovkin, I think, you know, he's moved up in weight is the other factor, and he's now had 46 or 47 fights. And I think that he's certainly no longer the number one fighter pound for pound in the world that he was considered to be going into that fight.
Kieran, is there any word on who one of my favorites right now, Terrence Crawford, is going to be fighting in May?
There's
do we have an opponent yet?
And negotiation at the moment for Felix Diaz to be that opponent, and I think that's still the preferred option. There are still negotiations underway, the details of which to which I'm not privy, but I believe that Felix Diaz is very much the front runner for that at the moment, with the fight likely to be in New Jersey.
Speaking about Mr. Pacquiao, is there any concrete idea about who he's going to fight? There once was an idea, and even Terrence Crawford's name's kind of sneaked into that mix. Amir Khan will probably just be a punching bag. Who do you think Manny Pacquiao fights if you had to put a bet on it right now?
Oh, I just don't know. I mean, that whole situation got completely blown up in that, you know, there was a fight all set for April 22nd, I think it was, in Brisbane, Australia, against a guy called Jeff Horn. And then unknown folks from the United Arab Emirates dangled the prospect of $38 million in front of him if he would fight Amir Khan. And obviously he and, I mean, I never had anyone dangle $38 million in front of me, but were someone to do that, I'm sure I'd leave that. $38, I'm cheap. But the money wasn't there. And so they ended up without anything at all. So, and now I'm not quite sure when he's next available because he's a senator, and so he can't fight during the Senate session. So I think July might be the earliest time now that he can fight, and I just don't know. His promoter, Bob Arum, said that Khan is off the table for that, and I think partly because of Ramadan, apart from anything else, Khan being observant in that regard. I couldn't even begin to hazard a guess at the moment who would be next for Pacquiao after this whole situation kind of like disintegrated over the last few weeks.
Kieran, what do you make of Conor McGregor's influence becoming even stronger now? This past weekend, Jimmy Manoa, UFC light heavyweight, knocks out Corey Anderson and says, you know what? I want to fight David Haye if I don't get a title fight in the UFC.
Great.
What do you make of this?
Wow. I guess a lot of UFC fighters are going to get knocked out in the boxing ring, eh? I mean, I don't know. Conor was, by the way, the night before the Golovkin fight. There was Michael Conlon made his professional debut in front of like 5,000 cheering fans. Who makes a professional debut in front of 5,000 fans in a packed arena? And Conor McGregor walked him out to the ring and was at ringside and you know, making sure that everybody knew he was there. There was a bit more attention, I think, even on Conor than there was on Michael Conlon. And insisting afterwards, I'm the future of boxing. I am boxing. I'm going to show you all. I'm going to knock Floyd Mayweather out, which he's really not going to do.
No.
I have no idea if that fight's going to happen. It kind of feels like it might. McGregor wins in 15 seconds if it's an MMA fight, and Floyd wins inside a round or two probably if it's boxing. It's odd for me. They're two completely separate sports. I don't know. I don't really know. I guess some UFC fighters are feeling that maybe that's just the potential to earn greater riches.
Chasing the money, right?
In the boxing
money,
ring.
Money.
I guess so, right? I guess so.
Dangling that $38 in front of us, buddy.
It's what it is.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, who am I to talk? We've established that what my price is, so who am I to talk?
Kieran, thank you so much for making time for us this evening, sir. We could talk to you probably all night.
Probably.
We didn't really get into the whole Mayweather-McGregor fiasco, that would be, the circus that would be. We'll save it for the next,
visit.
For the next time. And also, we didn't even get to talk to him at all about climate change, which I know is something that you're very passionate about, looking at the books that
Absolutely.
You've written. So, Kieran, thank you so much for making time for us this evening, sir. We'll hope to have you on again real soon. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much. I'm happy to come back anytime. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Kieran. That is Kieran Mulvaney, boxing writer for HBO.com and author of the best-selling book, The Great White Bear. You can follow him on Twitter at Kieran Mulvaney. I like that guy a lot. We need to have him on again
very good.
As often as possible. Let's take a commercial break, and then coming up on the other side, we're going to talk about how your bracket's looking at the NCAA tournament.
Hey, Buffa!
Hey, everybody, not just me.
Yeah, mine's not really much to brag about either.
I'm doing okay. I'm
I got three of the four.
Yeah, he's doing okay.
I got three of the four. You're listening to the Heavy Hitters, and we are live from the Frank and Helen's Pizzeria Studios, right here on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com. Lift me up.